The post-punk progressive pop party is the newest sounds, free tickets to the best shows, the poop on the area group scoop, and your favorite post-punkers 6 nights a week. Come with us from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. in the morning. We're the station that won't burn out your stereo light. 88.7 FM WVHC.
It's just a hair past 10 o'clock. Good evening and welcome to another version of Interview Saturday. I'm Jeffrey Foss, and tonight my guests are Mark Campbell and Dave Kaufman of The Nails, a New York City-based band. They just released a brand new EP. It's a lot of fun, and for the next hour we're going to talk about it, so stick around.
Dancing to the beat of the bongos, British chase of platinum afro.
You're at 88.7 FM, WVHC. I'm Jeff Foss, and with me, we have two distinguished guests this evening. Mark Campbell. Campbell? Is that right?
Right.
And
the soup.
Dave Kaufman. And vocals and keyboards, respectively, for the group The Nails, of which you were just listening to. We just heard Hotel for Women. And, well, first of all, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Thank you. It's nice Welcome. Being here.
Could you define that song that we just heard? It's definitely if you got to give it a label, how would you define it? What kind of labels would you affix to that?
I mean, to the sound. Well, there's some reggae influences in it because this band has been together since 76, and when we first got together, we formed as a white reggae band in mm-hmm. Colorado. And so there's a kind of weird mutation of reggae and psychedelic dub effects. Basic feeling of it is, just kind of, we're getting into a very kind of third world influenced melodic psychedelia. It's hard to pin our sound down. You know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of influences in what we do. Connie Garcia, who is the vocalist on that particular cut, hails from New Mexico, so she's got some kind of southwestern Indian voodoo spirit. And Douglas, the sax player, is Jamaican. Did a lot of session work with a lot of different reggae artists, Inner Circle, Peter Tosh. So there's a little bit of Jamaican influence in there. And then just other influences, you know, have just been pop, you know, punk bands of the mid-60s. So we're kind of into a blend of mid-60s trash pop and reggae kind of sound.
It's definitely danceable. I think that's going to be a club hit.
This
is pretty brand new material, isn't it?
Well, actually, it's not. I mean, the record is just released. It was recorded earlier this year. But it's just being released. It's still in our repertoire. It's not one of our newest things. There's a lot of new material we've just developed over the past few months.
Now, The Nails have released a 3-song EP, and it's on City Beat. Is that the name of the label?
City Beat.
Uh-huh. Is that your own particular music?
Yeah, it is. It's our own label. And this is the second record that we've released on City Beat. The previous one was called Young and Wild and Transcontinental Ska, which also got a lot of club play, some radio play. It was a minor underground hit, I guess, in that it sold out its pressings. And it was well received.
And this is in collaboration with Jimboco Records. It's a sort of a joint venture. Two labels on the record.
Jimboco Records, which is run by Jim Reynolds, also has released work by The Rousers, Dizzy and the Romelars, and High Sheriffs of Blue.
And Nasty Facts.
And they saw us at the Ritz one night we were playing, and they came into our dressing room after the gig and said, we'd like to take you into the studio and record a record. So But because we have our particular way of doing things, we said, yeah, we'll do that, but we want to have a lot of artistic say in the final product, and we also want it to come out as well on our label, because City Beat is not only our label, but it is an artistic point of view. Everything that went into this particular record was considered and developed by the band, from the cover to the labels to the production as well. I mean, we contributed at least half of the production. But it was the first time that we've released something where we were not the sole producers, which was kind of nice. It took some of the pressure off us. And
I take it you're pleased with the outcome then?
Yeah, we are. It's like 32 tracks. We did it at a state-of-the-art studio in Manhattan called Media Sound.
Media Sound.
And so, I mean, we were fortunate in that, unlike a lot of our peers, we were given some access to some technology that a lot of people generally can't afford.
Now, is this something that people could find in a lot of, your common record stores? Would they have
common
to be
record stores,
a little more selective?
Yeah, it's available at Crazy Eddie's. That's about as common as you can get, I guess.
Mm. So normally you find such material in import record stores and things along those lines.
It's probably more common in the import record stores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And new wave, you know, your listening audience.
Uh-huh, I see. Now, the Nails, you said they originally came from Colorado, but you don't consider yourselves like a West Coast band or Colorado band. Now you're from the New York area. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, we're a cross hybrid of a lot of different things. We came together in Colorado in 76, just before punk broke out of New York and London. David was putting together a reggae band, and I at the time was writing rock criticism for a Colorado paper called the Colorado Daily. And I wanted to form a band that was going to be provocative, political, pornographic, dangerous. And I figured, having heard that David was trying to put together a reggae band, I figured anybody at that time who was interested in putting together a reggae band was in the vanguard, is going to be sensitive to the kind of material I was writing. So I approached him, and while I wasn't strictly at that time interested in doing a reggae band, the prospect of working with somebody who had that kind of openness, I figured he'd be sensitive to my material. So we got together, we did some reggae material, we did some covers, Psychotic Reaction, I Fought the Law. We did a reggae version of I Fought the Law 3 years before the Clash did. And a lot of original material, which was very, I don't know exactly how to describe it. It was a lot of like Dorsey type poetic lyricism with a kind of trashy Farfisa sound, rock. Very spare, very high energy, loud, and abrasive. And at that time in Colorado, which was kind of like the seat of this kind of mellow, you know, rock,
like
Jackson
easy
Brown,
listening.
Easy listening type
John Denver,
rock, that kind of stuff. We were not at all indicative of what was going on at that time.
Perhaps you had some acceptance problems out there?
Well, we were playing country bars because they were the only places to play. And we were playing places like the Timber Tavern and Coal Creek
Canyon.
I mean, these really Yahoo bars with filled with bikers and hippies and rednecks, and we were not accepted particularly, and but we got the last laugh, you know. We're still together and we're still adrift.
We did open for the Ramones once.
Yeah, we were like the token punk band out there, so we did get a lot of prestigious gigs in that. When touring bands came to town, there were very few, there were no bands to draw from as opening act. So we got to open for the Ramones, which on their first American tour. Other than that, there were really no places to play. We had to more or less set up our own situations. We were playing at places like the Community Free School. We had to create events ourselves.
Mm-hmm. We created an event with the Nerves,
yeah,
the band that spawned Peter Case and Paul Collins.
Right, who also wrote Hanging on the Telephone. That was one of our first self-created gigs. The Nerves were actually one of the first of the underground bands to do their own American tour, and they were traveling around in some beat-up car hitting. They were really innovative. They were from L.A., a three-piece, doing a very hard pop sound. And they came to Colorado, had no place to play. Denver record store, on the spur of the moment, put together a gig in a loft above the record store. And the Nerves and the Nails played. And it was a very exciting time. You know, it was like we all felt something was happening. Like Mr. Jones, we didn't really know what it was. It wasn't really, we weren't calling it punk because that really wasn't a term that was being used a whole lot at the moment, you know. This was just pre-Sex Pistols and first release, Anarchy, and just pre-White Riot Clash. So when those things came out, we felt, you know, that there were some kindred spirits out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we did manage to get a lot of press just through the outrageousness of what we were doing. We were kind of newsworthy in that sense. So we got press, and at that time we recorded our first single on Screwball Records, which was released in 1977. That was a song called Another Lesson. It was a little three-song EP, Another Lesson.
And the single Cops Are Punks.
Cops Are Punks, which was like meant ironically, because we were sitting in a restaurant one morning, Greek diner in Boulder, and a cop walked in, and he was dressed in a black leather jacket, big heavy motorcycle boots, and it dawned on me that he looked more punk than... So we suddenly realized that really cops were punks too, and we figured by including them in the movement that the guilt by association was a way of, you know, kind of subverting their... seriousness, I guess.
I notice in your press release you've got many different influences, inspirations, and diversions listed.
Yes.
Among those, if I may, the Seeds, the Love Group, the Doors, well, we went through that before, the Velvet Underground. Among some other ones are Willie Loco Alexander from the Boom Boom Band,
mm-hmm,
Linton Kwesi Johnson, Augustus Pablo, The Stranglers, The MGs, English Beat, The X Band, Orchestral Maneuvers, U2, King Curtis, and, well, the list goes on. Would you consider yourselves, then, if you would consider these to be inspirations and diversions and all, would you consider yourselves to be perhaps a composite sound of all your influences?
Well, actually, the only reason that list was put together was the press release is just, it's kind of indulgent. I mean, the reason that list of influences and diversions is there is just in a way to promote bands that actually don't need any promotion. Certainly the Doors don't, but it was just a way of letting whoever know, whoever got that in their hands, that press release in their hands, some of the bands that we have like felt aligned with, not necessarily just influenced by, but names that need to be mentioned and names that need to be heard over and over again. And like U2 is a new band that doesn't really influence us at all, but gives somebody writing about the band or somebody who hasn't heard the Nails some handle on at least what we're aligned with and what we're aware of, what we like.
I see that some of the things that you are also aware of are bowling, things that go crash in the night, beer, surfing, and upheaval.
Yeah, I'm a surfer. I go surfing every summer in Montauk,
uh-huh,
which probably is why we have a certain Dick Dale sound too. You know, we like simple guitar lines, like some of the early surf bands.
And conglomeration of many influences.
And we do have a bowling team, and we bowl on at the Bowlmore Lanes, the new chic bowling alley
in the Village.
Yeah, on
Tuesdays. I was there a couple of weeks ago, Tuesday night.
And we formed our own team, we got our shirts, and we have a decent team average. These are just things that we do to keep our chops up, you know, stay in health.
Yeah.
You know Smutty from the Rock Hats?
Yeah, I see him around.
He's a constant visitor down there.
Yeah, I've seen, it's really a wonderful scene, because I've seen, like, it's Annabella almost, from Bow Wow
it's,
Wow.
It's like a who's who in the new music industry these days.
Yeah.
Shows up there.
I saw Johnny Lydon there the other night, and he was not bowling. He was just sitting in one of the chairs, scribbling on a score sheet, which was being projected up on the score board, and he had scribbled PIL for president. and he was just sitting there drinking.
And lots of people stared at him watching him do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Speaking of influences, inspirations, and diversions. Well, let's talk more about the Nels, though. The other side, well, we heard the side A. Well, I noticed the, perhaps this is a typographical error, but the other side, which you figure would be side B, is called side one.
That's right. We felt that both sides were, neither side were B sides, so we...
Double A-sided EP.
That's right.
Well, it's a side A and side one.
Yeah. Okay.
Not two side A's.
Some people say front side, back side, or hip side and flip side. Right. Side A, side one. Can you tell us a little about Cutting Edge?
Well, I hope it says it all. It's just a simple song. With, good Lord, it's another
Club
song.
Hit, too.
You can dance to it.
Club hit, yeah. Right. And we had gone into Media Sound. We had done six songs there. And from those six songs, we were going to choose three for this EP. And we felt strongly about Hotel for Women, and we felt strongly about Cutting Edge as they were. The remaining four songs were not, the mixes weren't finished. We didn't feel that strong about it. And in addition to that, we felt that after going into a studio with 32 tracks and going through that whole kind of high-tech experience, that it would be a little bit more subversive to throw something on this EP that was like homemade, a little bit more spontaneous. Because when you're dealing with 32 tracks and you're doing overdubs, and it's intimidating, so you have to sometimes you end up doing things that aren't quite as honest or as gut level. So we went into our four-track studio. We did 88 lines about 44 women as a contrast to that big production of the other two songs. Something a little bit more nitty-gritty.
Okay, why don't we roll that right now? In fact, wait, quick question first. Does Cutting Edge segue into?
Now, there's a small space between it.
All right, well, I tell you what, let's roll Cutting Edge. We'll come back, talk some more, and then we'll play 88 lines about 44 women.
Wonderful.
Okay. You're at 88.7 FM, WVHC, and my name is Jeff Foss. Again, reiterating, my guests tonight are two members from The Nels, a now New York-based band. Is that's fair to say?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Me. Mark Campbell, Dave Kaufman, vocals and keyboards, respectively. Well, let me get it right. Vocals, guitar, co-founder and lyricist, that's Mark Campbell, and Dave Kaufman, keyboards, guitar, melodica, and co-founder. Well, we just heard Cutting Edge from the three-song EP just released by The Nels. Now, this is going to be distributed in Rockpool and a couple other places?
Well, Rockpool is distributing it to radio stations and...
Club DJs and things?
Club DJs and Disc Trading and Gem Records are distributing it to the stores.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a feeling you're going to be doing well with it.
I
who chose the cover art, huh?
It's an interesting story. I chose it. It's
a series
of 12 photographs taken in the 40s and the 50s by a photographer named Irving Claw, who was like the premier light bondage photographer of his era. He photographed a lot of the more famous bondage models, Lily Sancier and Betty Page, and... I went through about 200,000 photographs at his, he's dead, but his sister runs a store on 14th Street in Manhattan called Movie Star News, and they have about 200,000 photographs that he did, light bondage photographs, and lots of corsets and shoes and bras, and I went through about 200,000 photographs and selected these 12. I thought these were the most dramatic and evocative, I guess, and but it was a lot of fun going through. I mean, it was a real cultural experience, let me tell you.
I guess so. I wonder if you're going to get any feedback from the feminist persuasion people in the audience.
If so, it's tough.
I mean,
I thought about that, but I felt that these photos were not sexist or misogynist. I felt that they were dramatic, and if anything, in keeping with the tone of the Hotel for Women song, which is basically about women waitresses and women who are lonely and trapped in some kind of lifestyle that this country makes it difficult for some women to get into positions of wealth or comfort. And so these pictures, despite the fact the women are in bondage gear, I felt that was a metaphor for just being trapped. Anyway, that's my argument, if any feminists give me any crap about it. I feel, in addition, I find it erotic, and you know, that's okay too. There's women who like boys in black leather pants and stiletto pointy-toed shoes, so it cuts both ways. Right? I mean, you found that, haven't you?
I keep my personal sex life off the airwaves.
Well, if you could only see you now. Black underwear.
That's why this is a radio and not television. Please don't talk about my training bra. Oh, dear. Yeah, there it goes. My whole image is blown. Well, the last song that fills out the EP is 88 Lines About 44 Women. Now, we were talking about this before.
This is the one that we did in our loft. Four tracks.
Mm-hmm.
David and I did virtually all the music on it, other than the horns, which came in later. We switched instruments around. Normally, I play guitar. In this case, I played the bass and the drums. Normally, David plays keyboards. In this case, he played guitar as well as keyboards. And we laid down the tracks without having any idea, really, what the song was going to ultimately sound like. There had been no lyrics written for it. And Dave and I went into our homemade little studio and put down the basic tracks ourselves. And when it was done, our bass guitarist, George, and our sax player, Douglas, came in and played trombone and saxophone. And then I wrote lyrics, and I had a certain length of time to deal with. The song was however long it is, and I had to fill that time with lyrics. And I just decided to write a song that was part fiction and part autobiographical, about women I've known or women that I would have liked to have known, in couplets, you know. So there's two lines for 44 women, which ends up being 88 lines, thus the title, 88 Lines About 44 Women.
About 44 women.
Right here at 88.7 WVHC. At any rate, Mark, you were just telling me that basically that song is about you being victimized by...
Oh, God.
44 women?
That was off the record. Off the record.
All right. Well, a little bit of...
That was by way of a defense, because I'm sure it was tracking back to what you were saying about feminists' wrath. The song is tongue in cheek, and but ultimately it is about women who have ultimately had some power over me, and it's not an under my thumb type macho point of view. I don't think. I hope it's affectionate, and I hope that it's seen in that light. Because I think women are tops.
But it's more like, is it kind of a frustration that you feel about the power that they've had over you?
Not at all. I mean, I kiss the hem of their skirts. I think that...
It's a celebration.
It's a celebration, and it was just a way of... In fact, the very last line is dedicated to my 8-year-old daughter, Amaranta, so I ended it on saying, basically, I'm part of creating one of these women who will probably, in turn, break the heart of young boys...
All over in the future.
In the future. She's already breaking their hearts.
Mm. Let's talk about the nails, though. You guys haven't been performing live for a while, I understand.
No.
Any particular reason behind that?
Well, we had performed live since 1976. We were always performing in a very lively period of performing. We liked performing, and we played a lot of clubs.
When did you stop?
Basically, we played once out in Suffolk County this year in August, and that was the last time. And the last time we played in New York City was May. But since we played all the performances that you basically can in New York City, opening for Madness and John Cale and the Modettes and Dirty Looks and a lot of other bands that we've done enough and we wanted to re-examine ourselves and put out new recorded material and then play live again, which we're playing this Monday night at the Mud Club.
Monday night at the Mud Club, you hear
Monday,
that?
Monday, Monday.
It's the first New York City appearance since May of the Nails. And
all new material.
You're going to be playing the songs on the EP that night,
I assume? Yeah, we'll be playing that. It's a party, in essence. It's like we didn't, we weren't seeking any gigs, but we felt that the record, the release of the record, you know, kind of deserved some kind of public, you know, celebration. So Stephen Mass and Susan Crane at the Mud Club said, let's do a party. So we're throwing a party. It's a party. We're playing, but it's not going to just be a gig. It's open to the public.
Free.
Free. We decided not to charge any money because we didn't want that to be any kind of obstacle. Because it is a party, we felt that it should be free as well. Invite everybody out to come and see the band
and have a great time.
Yeah, have a good time
in New York City.
Well, the Nails, Mark Campbell, David Kaufman. Thank you very much for enlightening the audience to what the Nails are all about.
Thank you for giving us an opportunity. It's a rare opportunity to get on the radio in this area, and more power to innovative stations like yours. I hope to see you Monday.
I hope to be there.
It's nice to be here.
Thank you very much for stopping by. And one final note, Jimmy Dredd's coming up next with the post-punk progressive pop party till 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm Jeff Foss. Thanks very much for listening. Next Saturday night at 10 o'clock, the Alternative Top 20. And we are WVHC, Hempstead, New York.